You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Hello and welcome to Circle of White Light Radio with myself, Alan James. Good evening. It's Sunday, the 17th of May, 2020. Loads of things going on. The world has gone mad, as you all know. Loads of things going on. We're going to touch base on a few things tonight. And the guest on the show is a chap called Charles Michael Beaver. I'll be talking to Mike, which he likes being called, shortly in a few minutes' time, and a few things to talk about as usual. But before we do that, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email, contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
Hi folks. Well, you know the website, circleofwhitelight.com, as you know, we're on Patreon, patreon.com/COWLR. And obviously we have a PayPal button there. Thanks to everybody who regularly donates to the show. It's really much appreciated. As I say, we're sorting out donations to community groups and groups at the moment with the THI People's Club. So we're sorting that out at the moment. We'll keep you posted on that. Obviously, we like to pass on. So if we have extra donations, we will pass on and donate that to either a homeless charity or a local club or community, which is what we try and do. And if you want to contact me or contact the show, you can, the email is contactus@circleofwhitelight.com. As you know, regular listeners will know that now. Okay, so before I get the guest on, a couple of things that I just want to go through as usual. During the week on the website, thejournal.ie, there's more than 80 cases now before High Court over swine flu vaccine. The solicitor handling many of the cases involving people who allegedly developed narcolepsy after receiving the swine flu vaccine has said more than 80 cases have now been lodged before the courts in relation to Panoramix. Obviously, it's a drug. In 2009, the World Health Organization, the WHO, declared a swine flu pandemic. The Irish government and the HSE purchased over 8 million Pandemrix vaccines, which were made by GlaxoSmithKline Beecham. Many people received the vaccine before its use was suspended in Ireland after 2011, after concerns were raised about negative side effects, including a link with narcolepsy and other sleep disorders. The British Medical Journal published an investigation last September which noted that serious safety concerns were raised in 2009, nearly 2 years before the vaccine's use was stopped in Ireland. No surprise there. A repeat. You see the way things repeat in history? Thalidomide, asbestos. You know, we keep falling for the same thing over and over again. Legal proceedings in two more cases were issued during the week. One case involving a woman is listed for trial on the 8th of October next. The other case involves an underage boy. The defendants in both cases are the Minister for Health, the HSC, SmithKline Beecham, and the Health Products Regulatory Authority. You know, time and time again, we talk about the dangers of vaccines and what is in the ingredients in the vaccines. And you know, people just go ahead and just believe the doctors and believe the HSC and believe the government and don't do their research and look into it. And of course, you can't sue, a lot of the time you can't sue the pharmaceutical companies. They're immune from prosecution, as you know. Some of them are anyway. So, you know, if they believed in the product, they put the money where their mouth is. And the doctor would know what's inside the actual vaccines, the ingredients, but they don't. My week. So contact tracing. I'm sure you've heard about this in the news and what's going on. They want you to download an application onto your phone and be able to track you. So the sheeple are going to download the tracing app, and if they can track your mobile phone, even if you don't have the app and your mobile phone was close to someone who had the virus, will they force test and quarantine you? Time to leave your mobile phone at home. I won't be downloading any apps and will consider switching my phone off if this starts to happen. Or put it on airplane mode, maybe. Maybe we have to go back to CB radio, folks. I think that's where we might have to be. Someone posted up on Facebook that their son, who works in the Mallow Hospital, told her that it is being investigated for hyping the numbers of the COVID-19 deaths. Now, apparently, Leo Varadkar, who's our Taoiseach, as you know, our Prime Minister, was on the mainstream media talking about this. So they are aware of it, and it's been out in the public domain. But if anybody has any information about it, by all means, email me at contactus@circleofwhitelight.com. I'd like to find out a bit more about it, if the Mallow Hospital has been exposed for hyping the figures. And obviously that causes fear, which is what we don't want. And also, during the week, I posted up a video of the UK's health expert saying that the virus will not affect the majority of people. 80% who got it asymptomatic, since symptomatic, will feel like they have a cold. So you just have to go to bed, basically, and sleep it out. A minority of those that may need to go to hospital may only need oxygen, and a minority of those that are in hospital might have to go to critical care, and some of them will die. But look, this sounds exactly like the winter flu. People die of the winter flu, pneumonia, COPD, and a number of other symptoms. And so the numbers just don't tally up. And the fact that their health expert has come out and said that the majority of people won't be affected by the virus, you would think that the Irish government would go, okay, that's fine, let's lift the lockdown and let's take it off and just let's go back to normal. But no, they won't do it, because obviously they've got egg in their face. As far as I'm concerned anyway, in my opinion, the Irish government have got egg on their face, and they know they made a mistake, so they have to play it out to make it look, because they know there's a handful of people who are still in fear of this, and they'll play the game. That's just my opinion on it, and it's just ridiculous. Also, I don't know whether you've seen it during the week, another video that I posted up on my Facebook page. Doesn't a female Italian minister in the Italian parliament exposing the complete agenda of the cabal regarding the virus and the vaccines? She wants Bill Gates arrested for crimes against humanity. I want to highlight the fact that she was female and she has a bigger pair of balls than any male politician in the Irish government. And that's true. She actually stands up in the Italian parliament and goes through the whole plan, well, near enough a lot of the plan of what they're planning to do, even down to the microchipping. She talks about it and exposes the whole lot and wants Bill Gates arrested. So that was interesting. That was good to see. And what we need is more and more of that happening. You know, we need more people, politicians and people coming forward and exposing what's going on. Okay, I'm going to bring my guest in a minute. We go through his bio. Charles, who goes by the name Mike, is a hypnotherapist. As such, he has worked with one abductee used as a breeder for one of the grey races and has assisted one client to remove a dark spirit attachment. Well, we know about them, don't we? Walk-ins and everything else. As an information technology professional with over 41 years of computer experience, Mike has worked with over 60 professional IT-related contracts. His clients include the CIA, the FBI, Defence Security Services, DISA, the Library of Congress, the Treasury Department, NATO, the Army, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, Microsoft, Shell, Amoco, Conoco, Halliburton, Brown & Root, Cox Enterprises, GE, and numerous others, including a who's who of the world's largest corporations. Well, a lot of them ring a bell to us, I have to say. Let me just go to page 2 here, because there's a bit more. At the world's largest training centre of any kind, Mike, with the help of Vendor, almost single-handedly stopped a congressional investigation. While working for NATO as a contractor, he was part of Petraeus' daily briefing for a short period, then he ran the Afghan conflict. He is an honor degree videographer, an award-winning photographer, and a student of Chuck Norris's best friend, who's one of his best students. Mike worked as a stuntman in the motion picture industry and as a freelance videographer, grip and worker bee for over a decade. He fell off buildings, did martial arts, took action photographs, directed, ran video camera and acted on rare occasions, though he has never said a single word in any movie or PSA. He is an amateur ufologist, a web page administrator, an unpublished author looking for an agent, and has been on occasional ET contact since his first close encounter on October 3rd, 1980. Good evening, Mike. How are you?
Good, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Listen, thanks a lot for coming on and joining us. I read out your bio there, and you've done amazing work there, fantastic stuff. And I'm not too sure where to kick off, but probably the best way to kick off, as I normally do, is I ask the actual guest, you know, how did you wake up? What was the catalyst for you to stepping outside the matrix and saying, this world is not right, there's something going on?
Wow, that's kind of a hard question to answer because I've had weird things happen to me since I was very young. So I'll give you an example. Okay, so I was born in East Texas, where there's more rednecks per square inch than any other place in the world. And at the age of eight, my parents divorced, and I was living in Houston, Texas. After that, now at the age of 18, I was in a apartment complex, living on my own, unemployed. I'm laying on my bed in my bedroom. The lights are all off. The blinds are closed, but it's sunny outside, so there's plenty of light coming into the room, but it's fairly dim. So I walk into the bathroom, and I'm urinating at the urinal. And I look up at this mirror on the wall. There's a full-size mirror on the wall, and I can see this spirit or this form, this energy thing hovering in the doorway behind me, reflecting in the mirror. And it's just a shape that's barely visible but very visible. And it's not a particular shape. It's like morphing and changing, and it's barely there, but I can see it. So I turn the top of my body around. I twist around while I'm still urinating, and I can see it in the doorway. And you know, it's in the mirror reflecting, and it's in the doorway. And this thing followed me to the restroom pretty much almost every day for a period of time. And that's an example of one of the earlier things that happened to me. So that's a disincarnate. And I tend to talk about disincarnates because there's, according to the theories that I go by based on cosmology, there's like 17 disincarnates for every incarnate. And we can go through that if you want. But there's a website that kind of lays out. Are you familiar with the 4% universe? Do you know what that means?
It doesn't ring a bell at the moment.
Okay, so you have my website up, right?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Okay, so go...
Well, mind you, this is going to be awkward for an audio show to go to your website.
Fine.
So let's not do that. Let's just talk about... because what I want to get to is your experience stepping outside the matrix more so. You had a paranormal experience, and there's a lot of people that do have paranormal experiences, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the catalyst for them stepping outside the matrix. So what I'm trying to get to is, what was the catalyst for you? I mean, I know you, obviously the paranormal would make you question things, all right, but was there something that triggered you or something that got you to question the whole idea of the New World Order and the cabal and the global system we're in?
No, I believe in all that stuff. But I haven't questioned anything you've just stated, but, you know, I had my first close encounter on October 3rd, 1980 with an alien craft up in the sky. I had, do you follow MUFON much?
No, I don't know.
Okay, so you don't know who the current leader is and who the previous leaders were and all that, right?
Well, I kind of, you hear rumors on the internet saying that MUFON was infiltrated. And when you hear things like that, you think, well, you know, this is one of the things that the Cabal like to do. They like to have their people everywhere, and they infiltrate certain groups if they know that they're getting ahead of themselves. Now, I don't know how true that is, but this was the rumor at the time. So, you know, I could be wrong with that.
Well, I was on a call, on a talk show with one lady you would recognize if I said her name. And we were talking about another show that I was on previous to that. And you know who Joe Montaldo is?
No, I don't know.
Okay, he has a show called, what's it called? I don't know the name of it, but I was on his show twice. And we were talking about MUFON, and it goes back to my own encounters, right? Mm. So I had two close encounters. One was on October 3rd, 1980. In Northwest Houston, Texas. Another one was 6 months later on NASA base before the first space shuttle launch. Okay, so I reached out to MUFON and told them about these encounters, and the international head of MUFON at that time, John Schuessler, who was doing. He was calculating launch trajectories for the shuttle, and he worked for McDonnell Douglas as a contractor for NASA. And he investigated my first two incidents, and so I'm on this radio show talking to Joe Montaldo, and I ask him about John Schuessler because I knew he was connected with all these people in a very tangential way. He interacted with him he's an abductee, and he has a show about abduction and all this stuff. And so I knew he had some experience with John Schuessler directly. And he said, well, John Schuessler stepped down as being the head of MUFON for health reasons. But he said at the same time, last time he talked to John, he had no health problems. And so I was like, well, why did he step down if he had no health problems, if he stepped down because of health problems? So that kind of gets into the conspiracy of, you know, the CIA or whoever infiltrating MUFON. You wonder, why did this guy step down if he had no health problems when he'd stepped down for health problems? So I'd mentioned that to this other lady looking back at the show I was on with Joe Montaldo. So, but anyway, I can go in all different directions with this conversation. We can continue going down the road of aliens, but I tend to think of disincarnates more than aliens. And, you know, you have people, like, for instance, I'll give an example. I was at a ghost hunt in Skykomish, Washington, which is very close to Snohomish, Washington. And it's a ghost town. It's dead. There's no power. You walk around in the city and you can't see your hand in front of your face because it's that dark. And so I'm wearing this girl's third generation night vision goggles, and we're looking at all these, looking around, trying to look for ghosts, right? And all these women, I'm with like 30 women, and there's no other guys besides me. I'm the only, there's only like one or two other guys and 30 or 40 women, right? Mm. And these women look up and goes, there's one, and there's one, and oh, there's another. And they're seeing these things because they're more psychic than I am. I'm not seeing any ghosts, right?
Right.
But I'm standing – at some point, I'm standing behind this paranormal researcher, right? She's a UFO researcher and a paranormal researcher. She's got a Zero-Lux, Sony Zero-Lux infrared camera, right? And they can – I don't know if you know this, but an infrared camera can pick up ghosts and spirits in real time.
Yeah, you see that in the paranormal shows, don't you?
Right. Mm. So anyway, I'm standing behind her, and this orb flies over us and comes down in front of the camera. And I can't see it with my naked eyes, but once it gets in front of the camera, I can see it. And it's flying as an orb, it's flying in an infinity sign. Okay, it's going back and forth in this figure eight symbol, horizontal eight symbol. And I realized this is a spirit, not a bug, right?
Yeah.
And so it's recorded on this camera. And then after this thing, after it's all over, she sends me a VHS copy of this tape with this spirit flying in a figure eight fashion on this VHS tape, right? And so I watch it half a dozen times, and I always get to this one point where the spirit is flying in a figure eight formation, right? And that's the highlight of the whole film, because the rest of it is just these orbs flying past the camera really fast. And you could just say, oh, those are just bugs, right? So I'm working at Microsoft. I mentioned earlier in our pre-talk that I'd worked at Microsoft. So I'm working at Microsoft, right? And I start talking to these people about ghosts and stuff, and they don't believe me. They're skeptics, just like most people. So I go home and I get this VHS tape that I've watched this video of this orb flying in a figure eight formation over and over and over and over. I've watched it many times, right? So I take it up to Microsoft. We go upstairs to the second floor, and we get in front of this wide flat screen TV, this like 55-inch TV back when there was no such thing, when they cost like $50,000 for a 55-inch TV. And I stick the tape in the VHS player, and I play it, and I fast-forward it, and I'm looking for this spot where the spirit is flying in a figure eight formation. It's no longer on the tape. It disappeared from the tape. So that's an example of how if you record something paranormal to electronic to magnetic media, it can just disappear. That's one of the ways I knew that was an actual ghost, because it just disappeared from the tape. The tape was never edited, but it just disappeared from the tape. So, anyway.
I find that very strange, because it's recorded on the media.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't do the same on digital, but on magnetic media, it can't. Audio and video can disappear off magnetic media if it's paranormal.
Okay, that's quite interesting. I haven't come across that before. Out of just curiosity, why was there so many women regards to men? Was there a reason for that?
Well, most men don't believe in the paranormal, but yet there's a whole – but women – a lot of people don't know this, but women's brains work actually better than men's brains work. An average man has a bigger brain than the average woman, but his body weight is bigger too. So it's not about the size of your brain. It's about the size of your brain compared to your body weight, okay? And women you really don't have one brain, you have two brains, and they talk to each other through the corpus callosum, right? And women's brains, the two halves of the brain, talk to each other better through the corpus callosum than men do. So they have an intuitive sense. They use the right half of the brain more than the male does, and they've got more balanced usage of the two sides of the brain than men do. That's why their intuition is stronger. And they, you know, so that's why I believe that women are they're more open-minded to things like the paranormal. So if you go on a ghost hunt, you're going to see mostly women, because they're more open-minded to that sort of, to anything. And men are more analytical. That's why you see men dominate the scientific fields, because men are kind of locked into their left half of their brains rather than using both sides of their brain together.
Well, there you go. If there's any single men listening in, you know where to meet single women. Go on a paranormal hunt.
Go ahead.
I was just going to going back to your encounter in October 1980. Yeah. What kind of encounter was that?
Well, I was I had come home from a party, and I'd gotten high at the party, smoked some pot. I was hooked on marijuana. I stayed high in morning, noon, and night for 18 years, and I started smoking pot at the age of 16. I was cured of that addiction at the age of 34. I was laying on a bed, and a spirit came upon me and covered me, and it was like it was using my my speech patterns in my brain, it said, my first commandment to you is to stop smoking. And then it went away. And from that moment on, I never smoked another joint from that moment to the present. So I smoked from the age of 16 to the age of 34. Now, getting back to your about that close encounter on October 3rd, 1980, I was contemplating committing suicide at that time, at that moment. I'd come home from the party. I was in my brown Pontiac Le Mans car, and I pulled into my mother's driveway, and I was sitting there, and I was thinking about committing suicide. I was thinking of leaving the planet, but not in an alien craft, just, you know, through suicide. Mm. And that's why I believe they came, because that's what was on my mind. They knew I was ready to leave the planet. So I'm sitting there in the car, and I have this image appear in the middle of my head, and all I see is a circle of lights turning slowly from left to right, and it came on for like a quarter of a second or less, just long enough to see the movement, and then it disappeared, and then it came on again for a quarter of a second and disappeared, and it came on again for it did this like three or four times in the middle of my head. I could see it literally in the middle of my head visually. Mm. And I've only visualized like once in my entire life, so I've never been able to visualize effectively. And so seeing something in my head visually was very new to me, and I'm like, what is that? What did I just see? And I'm thinking about it, and after a minute or two, I forget. It's like I don't care about it anymore. It's no big deal. I finally, oh, okay, well, whatever. And because I don't recognize it as an alien craft or anything, I just see a circle of lights turning very slowly, and just for the briefest of seconds. And so I stop thinking about it, and it takes me like 20 minutes to get out of my car because I'm below the level of depression. I'm like, I don't have enough energy to move a muscle in my body. Mm. And so eventually I get out of the car and I turn around and I have the doors all the way open. The windows are rolled down, and it's 11 o'clock on October 3rd, 1980. I'm on the northwest corner of Houston, just outside the corner of Clay and Gessner, and like a block from where that grinding company building blew up like about a month ago. So anyway, I turn my doors all the way open. I'm standing outside the vehicle. I turn facing the rear of the vehicle, which is south, and I look up in the sky, and what I saw in my head is sitting in front of me in the sky. It's a ring of lights and nothing else. It's like a black hole with a ring of lights around it. And so and I'm like, really? You know, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is I'm hallucinating, because I'm a skeptic by heart. Even though I warned the aliens to come down and take me away, I didn't think they ever would. And so my first thought is I'm hallucinating. That's not real. So I turn around, I roll up my window, I step into my vehicle. I'm on my knees. I reach over, I roll up the other window, and I step back on my knees, and I look over at the digital clock in the car, and it says 11:00. It's exactly 11 p.m. on October 3rd, 1980. And then I step out of my vehicle, and I lock the door. I've already locked the right door. I now lock the left door, and I step back, and I shut the door, and I turn around. I expect this thing to be gone because I think it's just an hallucination, right? I don't even believe it's real. Mm. I turn around after I've shut the door, and I look up, and it's still sitting there, right? And it literally if I told you everything that happened in this encounter, it would take the rest of the show. It would consume this entire show. That's how long this encounter is. It's like an hour-long encounter.
Wow.
And so
– and you remember it, because a lot of people have lost time.
Well, they didn't take me. They gave me the opportunity to leave. This is not the race that goes – see, I call myself – Joe Montaldo and I got into this. He's an abductee, and on his show, we were arguing back and forth. He's like, all contactees are really abductees, because there's no such thing as a contactee. There's only abductees. There are people who have been abducted and people who haven't made contact. If you've made contact, you're an abductee. That's his belief. Well, I'm not believing that, right?
Okay.
I'm thinking that that's not correct. And so...
Well, I think we have to define what we mean by abductee, because, number one, it's not always going to be ETs. It could be the secret space program. Number two, there's people that have been taken up in ships, not abducted, but they've actually been brought on board on a ship in a positive light and shown around, not being put on a slab to be experimented on or fluids being taken. So, you know, so I think we have to, it's important to define that, because people have had different experiences.
Well, I have, as far as I know, I've never been on a craft, number one. Number two, I don't think I've ever been abducted. Number three, I have no implants that I'm aware of. Number four, the only contacts that I know of that I've had are ones where I sort of started the, like I called them to me in one fashion or another. So this first encounter, I called them to me because I was thinking of leaving the planet by suicide. So my brain state called them to me. The fact that I was in that mind state ready to leave, that's why they came, right? So that brain wave frequency was being sent out. And so I was calling them to me in that fashion of putting out the right frequencies of mind state, right? But I wasn't thinking of aliens. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example of how I learned. One of the ways that I proved that I'm actually a contactee, I told you I've worked, the CIA is one of my customers. Well, before I worked for them, I had a polygraph that I took, a full scope poly, and I failed it. It was for a different job, not the one I actually did for them, but a different job, a previous job. And so, when we got through with the polygraph, the guy said, well, you failed these two questions over and over. You kept failing them. And I forgot what the second question was, but one of the questions he asked me was, do you have ongoing contacts with foreign agents? And I said, truthfully, no, I don't have any ongoing contacts with foreign agents. That's the truth. There's no Russians or North Koreans or Chinese or anybody. I don't have foreign contacts with good agents, let alone bad agents, right? And so I said truthfully, I have no such contacts. But my polygraphs keep saying I'm being deceptive in this question, right? So basically, okay, the only thing I could come up with logically was it was picking up the fact that I do have ongoing contacts with aliens. Those are foreign agents, right?
Mm.
Okay, so that's an example. But anyway, anyway, I tend to talk about attaching spirits. If people get me on these shows, they say, talk. Tell us your message. I start talking about attaching spirits because, see, I have an attaching spirit that sits on my head, and I have one that sits on my back, and they are nasty little boogers. Mine are demonic. I believe that most people have attaching spirits, that most people have two or more attaching spirits, but they're not necessarily demonic. So I've got a quote I'd like to read you from William Baldwin's book. Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
Okay. The quote is, people have discovered and described many different types of non-physical entities and energies, such as crystals, shapeless blobs, thought forms, various types of human and non-human spirits, little people, such as trolls, imps, gnomes, divas, which are the nature spirits associated with plants. This is often found with cocaine or marijuana addiction. So I was sitting across a card table, on the other side of a card table, with a lady when I was about 18. I'd go over to her house. We would listen to Robert Monroe's out-of-body tapes. Do you remember those?
No.
Okay, so do you remember Robert Monroe?
No.
Okay, do you remember? So you don't remember the Monroe Institute?
I've heard of the Monroe Institute, but I don't know a lot about it.
You know what hemispheric synchronization is?
Is that got to do with the when you put on the headphones with music, it's a way of actually tuning into using certain frequencies?
Well, what hemispheric synchronization is you play one tone in one ear and you play a different tone in another ear, and the two halves of your brain sync to the differential frequency. You're playing 50 hertz, or let's say you're paying 30 hertz in their left ear and you're paying 80 hertz in your right ear. Brain's going to entrain to 50 hertz. 30 from 80 is 50. So your brain, both sides of your brain entrains to one frequency, the differential frequency. Subtract the lower frequency from the higher frequency, the difference frequency that both halves of your brain sync to that one frequency. So it helps you go into higher mind states because your two halves of your brain are syncing together and working as one brain rather than working as two brains.
Yeah, that's I was asked to do something like that. I had a friend of mine who actually had some audio tapes and headphones, and it's similar to that. And she said to me, do you want to give this a try? Because it's supposed to get you on a higher energy, a higher level, a higher frequency.
Well, okay, so there's a lot of different ways you can go into the super learning mode of the two halves of the brain syncing together. You can do laying out of hands will do it. If you start doing laying out of hands and channeling the energy, your two halves of your brain will start syncing together. You can listen to hemispheric synchronization technologies, or it's called HemiSync, that'll do it. But so anyway, I would go over to this girl's house and we would listen to these Robert Monroe tapes to try to get out of our bodies. And so when I was at her apartment one time, the party had finished and it was just me and her, and she's sitting on the other side of this card table from me. And she said, you know, you have an imp jumping around on the top of your head. And I said, really? And I already knew before she said it that there was a spirit jumping around on the top of my head. It's one of my attaching spirits. And the way I knew she was actually seeing it was the fact that she said it was jumping around. It never jumps around, but in that moment it was jumping around. It was a very rare symptom of what it does. It never jumps around, but it was jumping around at that moment. She could see it jumping around. So I knew that she could actually see it. She called it an imp, just like I gave you in that quote. An imp is a small demon.
Yeah.
So I was in jail in Portland, Oregon one day, and I'd been put in jail for – it was either – I think it was – in that case, it was marital discord. So anyway, I had this cellmate. He was sitting on the bottom bunk, and I was sitting on the – floor of the cell, and I was sitting in a semi-lotus position, and I was doing a Kriya yoga technique. I was bowing and doing the side-to-side motion, and I was moving my focus through the chakras down the front, up the back, and you know, and I was basically getting the energies to run through the chakras. And when I finished doing the meditation, I opened my eyes and I looked over at him, and he looked at me and he said, you know, you have a demon sticking its tail in your back. And when the girl told me about the one on my head, I already knew about that one. But when he mentioned the one on my back, I didn't know about that one. But I could feel the sharp pain in my back at the time, and I moved my focus of my mind to my back, and I could feel the sharp pain of its tail sticking in my back. And I could also feel the energy around that sharp pain. And the energy around that sharp pain is what gave me the clue that there was a spirit on my back rather than just having a sharp pain in my back like a normal back pain. So if you have a sharp back pain and it stays in one position and it does not move, that's a normal back pain. If you have a sharp pain in your back and it moves around to different positions all the time, that's an attaching spirit. Similarly, if you have a headache and it's localized to a particular area, it's not spread out across your whole head, and you put your hand on that spot and it goes away, and you take your hand off, it comes back. You put your hand on, it goes away. You take your hand off, it comes back. That's an attaching spirit. So there's all these different symptoms you can have with attaching spirits, but they're different from, like, that headache is different from a normal headache because of the fact that if you put your hand on your head with a normal headache, it doesn't go away. It's still there. It doesn't even it doesn't even change at all because the pain is coming from inside your head.
But why would putting your hand on your head stop the pain? Because
the spirit is attached to the surface of your body, and when you put your hand on that spot where it's attached, for some reason it can't go through your hand. It goes through your body. It's actually hovering above you, attached to you, the surface of your body, and also going into your body. But when you put your hand there, for some reason your hand blocks it. And I don't know why it blocks it, but it does. And you'll feel that energy on the top of your hand. You'll feel it on the edge of your hand. You'll feel it underneath your hand. If it's underneath, it can move away or it can stay in that same spot and just get very thin. But it's there, but it doesn't. Somehow your hand blocks it. I don't know why. Don't get me to explain that. I don't know why, but that's my experience. So,
okay, that's interesting. I did interview Alba Weinman, and she's a regressional hypnotherapist, and she does a lot of YouTube videos and sessions, and she was removing entities from people, spirits that attach. For some reason, and people would say, oh, I have a pain in my arm or pain in my leg, whatever. And she would actually speak to the entity that's attached to that person and get them to move on to the light or wherever she has to send them. And then the person will come out of the regression and she'll ask them, how's the pain? And they go, oh, the pain's gone. And of course, people are familiar with walk-ins and attachments. Obviously with you smoke marijuana and drugs and alcohol, any of them are going to bring you down, you'll be low vibration and open up the portal for any of them to actually jump in.
Well, that's not exactly how it works. What happens is you have a series of protective layers around you that are your energy fields, that you have all these layers of who you are. And protective layers that are around you. There's one that sits on the outside of your body that's like paper thin. That's one layer. And then you have a layer on the outside of that and a layer on the outside of that. And you really stretch out beyond the edge of the room you're in. And your energy field goes way out. And you also have a vertical energy pole that goes vertically up your body in the center. And it goes up vertically, basically to infinity, and goes down horizontally down into infinity. And if that pole ever turns on, you'll hear a sound. Do you know anything about remote viewing?
Yeah. But I was just going to say the seven fields, apparently we have seven energy fields around us, and our aura is apparently supposed to be 8 foot wide. And this is why, you know, when you're walking down and you're in, populated areas or shopping, and everybody's aura is rubbing off each other. And I know I've been in situations shopping where I'm picking up all these kind of thoughts from obviously people on passing by, thinking, where the hell is that coming from? And I always kind of say to people, just pull your aura in if you're going out somewhere, because otherwise you're going to be rubbing your aura off other people. But remote viewing, we had a chap on, Paul, there's a chap over here, Paul was on the show a few years ago on Open Your Mind Radio, and Paul actually teaches remote viewing. And we got into the subject matter. He actually teaches it over here in Ireland. Familiar with it. I've never done it, but I'm familiar with it.
Okay, so the father of remote viewing here in the United States, Ingo Swann.
That's right.
Him and another very talented psychic, D. Scott Rojo, went astrally to the planet Mercury before our probes went there, and they looked at the planet and they noticed its field going out to the side, and they described it. And when our probes went there, the description the probes gave was the same as the description they gave earlier. So anyway, D. Scott Rojo wrote a book called Music of the Spheres, and I went looking. I was sitting on a couch one day, and my the energy p- part of me that's in the center came on, it turned on, and I could hear this remote, this faint sound like a it was just a, okay, so do you seen the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Oh, a long time ago.
Okay, so there's a sound at the beginning of the movie where the apes are all jumping around. There's an obelisk, and the obelisk is giving off this sound. It sounds like angels singing, ah, together, you know?
Yep.
Okay, that's at the beginning of the movie. At the end of the movie, you have the astronauts out in space and how the computer that controls the spacecraft won't let him back in, and you hear this sound that's supposed to be like space. Well, space, there's no sound in space, but they're making a sound that makes you think it's like space. It's a vacuum sound. Okay, it's kind of hard to describe. But if you take that vacuum sound that they put in the movie to make it sound like you would think vacuum would sound, which is not true because vacuum has no sound, doesn't carry sound. But that sound they had in the movie at the end that makes you think it's vacuum, if you combine that with the angel sound at the beginning of the movie, that's basically what I was hearing. And it was very faint, and it got louder and louder and louder and louder until it was so loud it was like somebody shouting shouting next to me. It was very loud. And I was trying to think, where is this sound coming from? And then I realized within a few seconds I could feel my ears vibrating. And I realized that the sound was not coming from outside of me. It was coming from my center, because I could feel the energy on the top of my head and the center of my head. And it was my own energy center that had turned on. And it gave off what D. Scott Rowe calls the music of the spheres. Now, the book, the music, it's not, the book is not titled Music of the Spheres. It's something else, colon, space, music of the spheres. So that's not the full name. That's the partial name. So if you go looking for D. Scott Rojo, R-A-J-O, and Music of the Spheres, you'll find the name of this book. Go read it. And what he says in there is this sound comes on when you're dying and when you're leaving your body, but only rarely does it come on. It's a very rare sound. So anyway, I had had this experience happen two or three times while I was sitting on the couch. And then I went looking for, some idea of how to figure out what this was. And I was in the library in downtown Houston on the 7th floor or 5th floor or whatever it was. It wasn't the 7th. It was like the 5th floor. And I was going down this one aisle, looked up, and I saw D. Scott Rowe's book, Music of the Spheres. And I knew that was a book I needed to read. So I reached up, grabbed it, pulled it up, opened it up, and that's where I learned about the music of spheres from him. But he doesn't give off that much information in the book. But anyway, so that's an experience. But why did I bring that up? There was a reason I brought that up. But anyway.
You're talking about the remote viewing.
No, that's I brought that up to bring you back to the circle. I've already made the circle of information. But anyway, you're talking about, a minute ago, you were talking about a lady who does removing of attachments through hypnotherapy.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so have you ever heard of a guy named Dr. Carl Wicklund?
No.
Okay, so Dr. Carl Wicklund was he ran his own insane asylum. It was called the National Psychopathic Institute of Chicago. And his wife was a psychic, and he would put her into a trance. She'd be laying on a couch or somewhere, and his client, who would be one of his patients from his insane asylum, from the National Psychopathic Institute of Chicago, one of his clients who's everybody's calling insane, right? They would be standing there, and he would take a Wimshurst machine. Wimshurst machine is a static electricity device, and you crank it, and you crank this crank, and it turns a wheel. And on the wheel, you have these blades of metal, and the electronic leads touch the blade of metal, and then they don't touch, and then they touch the next one. And there's these two glass jars, upside down jars with electronics in the middle of them on each side of this device. And those two devices collect electricity up to like 10,000, 100,000, million volts, like Tesla's coils. You get a lot of voltage, not maybe that much, but a lot, right? But the voltage, they touch your body with the leads coming off this thing, and it's very high amperage, very low voltage, like Tesla's coil. Mm. So you don't really feel the electricity coming off this thing, but the spirits inside of you, it feels to them like it's fire. So they want to jump out of you. So they jump. He would cause the spirits inside of people to jump out of them because with the Wimshurst machine. And they would jump because his wife was psychic and she was in trance. She's like an open medium. And so they jump inside of her. And then everybody sitting there, including the relatives of the person who's considered insane and, you know, their mother, sister, whoever, and the doctor and everybody else, they'd start asking the spirit through Dr. Wicklund's wife, why did you come into this person? When did you come in? Why are you here? We need you to leave. You're not supposed to be in there. You need to, there's some beings of light around you. Look to them. They will guide you and take you into the light. And they would, you know, that's how he would get rid of the spirits for his patients.
Well, as far as his wife must have been quite brave to do that, letting these kind of rogue spirits jump into her.
Well, yeah, I would say so, yes. But there was a lot of very powerful beings of light who were in this room, and they could control anything, any dark spirit, no matter how powerful the demon or any person. The thing about this is Dr. Carl Wicklund wrote two books. One is 30 Years Among the Dead, and the other is The Gateway of Understanding. And in both of those books, the word demon does not appear. So he is basically saying through his books that the attaching spirits he came across were not demonic. They were something else. They were mostly humans. And there's a book, have you ever heard of a guy named George Ritchie?
No.
He wrote a book called Return from Tomorrow. And he had a Scrooge, you remember the story, the Scrooge, what's the name of the, what's the story about the Scrooge?
Well, a Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christmas Carol, the Scrooge, you know? Okay, so that guy, in that story, the person who's the employer, who's Penny Pincher, he gets taken to the past, the present, and the future, and he's shown by the spirit all the things he's doing wrong, right?
Yeah.
Well, George Ritchie went through a very similar experience, and he writes about it in the book Return from Tomorrow. And in he had a being of light, whether it's Christ or some other being, came to him, and he took it took him to the past, the present, and the future. Now, I haven't read the book, but the part of the book that's relevant to our conversation is he takes him into this spirit takes George Ritchie into a bar, and they go up to the bar and they watch these people getting drunk, and they'd get so drunk they would pass out. And when they were passed out, the spirits of humans that had died that were alcoholics when they were alive would jump into the person, and they would just possess, they would be attached to them. And he would see the attaching spirits attached to the back top of the head where the cowlick is, where your back of your head touch it, merges with the top of your head where your cowlick is. That's where the ex-human ghost would be attached to the people drinking. And they would be, the attaching ghost, ex-human, would be basically living vicariously through the person still getting that, get that drunk feeling through the person who's an alcoholic. And so my attaching spirit sits in my head. More often than not, it sits in that position, top, back of the head. Even though mine are demonic, they're not human, the one that sits in my head tends to sit in that same spot.
So why don't you remove them?
Well, because I have a dream of the future that I'd like to play out.
And you need them to be attached to you?
Yes.
Right, okay. But it is a dream. Is it not intuition or some premonition? Is it just a dream?
Well, I've seen the future before, and I could tell you, you know, I could walk you through that experience. But in this case, it's just a, like, For instance, when I went to NASA base before the first space shuttle launch, I had a feeling that aliens would return there on base, and I bought a motorcycle and had my car stolen, which gave me the money to buy a motorcycle. I bought this motorcycle. It's kind of a long story, but I knew if I took the motorcycle to the beach just near Cocoa Beach, near Cape Canaveral, that somebody on the beach would look over at my motorcycle, walk over, start asking me questions about it, and they would have a pass to get on base. So I could get on base, and then on base I could see the aliens would come back to watch our first attempt at real space flight. And they did. They came back. My second encounter was on NASA base before the first space shuttle launch. But I didn't see that happening beforehand. I didn't know for sure it was going to happen, but I had an idea it might happen. So that's the same sort of thing with this attaching spirits in the future, what I would like to see happen. And I'm hoping it's going to happen, but it may not. I have no guarantee. I could die in the next 10 seconds. But, you know, I'm hoping it will happen.
So where are we with, I mean, at the moment, as you know, you've probably seen the Pentagon released three videos, I think, showing unidentified crafts. And I think they probably thought, sitting down, releasing them, thinking, oh, you know, people are going to lose the plot. And it's kind of, yeah, whatever, yeah, okay, and then concentrate on the virus. And it was complete, well, from what I've seen anyway, it was a complete anti-climax. And they went, oh, right, okay. And people just weren't interested. They weren't even bothered. So
you're talking about the three gun camera footage from the alien craft?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so do you understand that you probably don't know that the best footage was removed from the web, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, they have much better.
No. Okay, so.
Well, let's go. If you really want to get into footage, we all know, well, we hear about the story about Eisenhower meeting the good and bad ETs in that Air Force base in the 50s, and that was all recorded. You can't get better than that, really, can you?
Well, actually, you can.
Okay.
So there was a the footage that they showed, the tic-tac and all that stuff that was seen on CNN and on your nightly news for two nights in a row and then disappeared. That footage was one of those. I don't remember which is which, but one of those is like a 3-minute piece of footage, right? Mm-hmm. So I watched this stuff daily, right?
Yeah.
So one day I found this video footage online, and I still have a link to the website where it used to be. It was on a YouTube site. Okay, so the tic-tac footage that you see on CNN, that 3-minute footage, the whole footage is like an hour. Okay, and I've seen the full hour of that footage. Okay, they had it. There was a 2-hour video on YouTube that got removed. The link is still there, but the video is not. Okay, it was a 2-hour video. There was a MUFON. I think it was a MUFON meeting. There was a guy standing up on a stage. He was a former government employee, and he's showing this tic-tac footage, but he's showing the whole hour, all of it, which you can't see anymore. And so basically what it is the way it starts out, they're in they're inside of a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol Learjet or a plane, right? And they're looking down at the tarmac, and on the tarmac there's a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol Learjet that's wanting to take off, but the tower, this is on the island of Puerto Rico, it's on at the Aguadilla Airport on
Yep. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah,
we lost you there. Your audio went there, Mike.
Okay, so the footage from a Customs and Border Patrol plane, it's looking down at a Customs and Border Patrol Learjet wanting to take off, and they won't let it take off for a full hour because this thing is flying over the airport, over Aguadilla, for a full hour. And so It's the Tic Tac video. And so, or one of them, I don't know if it's a Tic Tac video, it's one of those videos that they show. And so he's the guy up on the stage in this MUFON meeting. He's talking, he's taking this hour long video. He's fast forwarding and rewinding and doing all kinds of, and stop motion and slow motion. And he's showing this, the full hour long video that you only see 3 months, 3 minutes of out in the open. And this was all on this website, and they removed it. It's a 2 hour video with a 1 hour video in the middle of it. Okay. He's standing up on stage talking about a 1 hour video within a 2 hour video. That's all been removed from the web. But I saw the whole thing before they removed it.
Now, the thing is that we have to ask the question, because we know about the SSP or the Secret Space Program. So it, just because we see something that we can't identify doesn't actually mean that it's a UFO, as in Little Green Men or ETs. It could be advanced crafts. Like the TRB, the TR3B?
Yeah, sure.
You know, well, that's just, you know, my take on it. I think, you know, it's very easy to just see something and say, oh, it's, you know, it's ETs or whatever. But we also know that they have, I had a chap on the show called Frank Chilly Jr. And Frank Chilly is actually going to be on the show in a few weeks' time. And he was talking about Bob Tompkinson, who was a top UFO. He was in the high level, and he was involved with developing and building these advanced crafts for the space program in the US. And Frank was a friend of Bob's. And there's videos on YouTube got to do with Bob talking about it. He's passed on now. And Frank came on, and he sent me over PDFs and images and stuff that they were developing. And he said they're like, you know, hundreds of years ahead in technology. And even Ben Rich from Skunk Works said before he passed away in 1995 that we have the ability to take ET home. So, you know, no doubt that we have advanced technology, and that could be a case of the military, you know, fighter pilots coming across an advanced bit of technology, thinking that it could be extraterrestrial when it's just advanced tech from another, you know, because it's all compartmentalized, isn't it? They don't know, you know, other departments on what technology is there. And that's just kind of the way I like to see it. So I'm kind of open-minded, but I'll kind of look at things like that. We do have questions for you here, Mike, if we go over to the questions from our listeners.
Sure.
Peter wants to know, what are your favorite crystals? Do you use crystals at all?
I don't.
You don't.
I have had some. I've had some rocks and various different things like that, but I don't. I'm not into healing anymore. I did that sort of thing when I was young, but I don't do healing anymore. I have made my living as a computer geek for most of my life. I was into laying on of hands healing, and I was into regressing people with hypnotherapy, and I was into all kinds of different things when I was young, but I've gotten away from all that, and I just have just done the computer geek thing more than anything else.
Well, your website is loaded with information, and we'll get all that contact information before you leave the show. At the end of the show, we'll get your link, and because Mike's website is full of information, and if you're into the stuff like that, where it's like packed with information, all different topics, then you'll love Mike's website. Right, I have another question from Chris on the chat room, and Chris wants to know, can you ask your guest what is his opinion of the Greys and what is their agenda?
Yeah, that's kind of a deep subject. So I was going to a MUFON meeting one time, and oddly enough, it was the best MUFON meeting I've ever been to. Nobody showed up.
Wow, okay.
It was really weird. Now, but check this out. Okay, I'm actually going to answer your question. So the only people that showed up were me, one lady who was an abductee, her husband, and her kid. And so the husband and the kid went into the library because the meeting was being held at a library, and it left me with her. And so I got a one-on-one with an abductee, She didn't sit there for the whole hour, 2 or 3 hours, but we sat there for like 30, 40 minutes, and I got to ask her questions about her abduction experience. And she said, we actually were talking about the Greys, right? Mm. So I asked her about them. I said, I'd heard a rumor that they were going to replace us take over or whatever. And she said, yeah, that's true. In the future, they will replace us. But that's that is like 5 or 6 generations down the road. It's not you. It's not your kid. It's not your kid's kid. It's like maybe 5 generations into the future. So that's one take on the Greys. But the Greys are not – a lot of people – even some of these really super sharp, very intelligent abductees talk about the Greys as if they're one race. The Greys are like there's a whole boatload of different races that are considered Greys, but they're not even Grey. Some of them are off-white, some are brown, some are bluish tint. There are all these different races that look like Greys. There's even Greys that are like part amphibian and part just all kinds of merging between Greys. Or Greys are, I think they come from like the insectoid area, like the mantids, but they're hybrids with all different kinds of other species. So you get all a boatload of different gray races, and so you really can't speak about all of them as if they're one race. It would be ignorant to do so. So I can't say, okay. So I'm going to go back to my own if you notice from my biography, I've worked with one abductee who has had, she was used as a breeder. She had 55 offspring, 24 implantations, 24 checkups, and 24 removals for a total of 72 encounters, 48 abductions when I knew her. And she said that the Greys that she was connected with looked at us like cattle. Mm. Like we were cattle.
No surprise there.
And so they're that far ahead of us. Have you been watching, speaking of the Greys, I'm going to get kind of off tangent here, but not really. Mm. Okay, so have you been watching the show Secret of the Skinwalker?
No, but I've watched the movie Jupiter Ascending, which basically says the same thing, that we're just here as cattle.
No. Okay, so did you read the book Hunt for the Skinwalker?
I haven't read the book, but are you talking about the Skinwalker Ranch?
I am.
Right, okay. Well, I'm familiar with kind of the story behind the Skinwalker Ranch.
You're familiar with the Shermans then? Okay, the Shermans owned the ranch first. Then they sold it to Bob Bigelow, who I've had a very minor connection with, very, very minor.
He's a billionaire, isn't he? He's involved in the UFO side of things.
Well, he owns his own aviation company, Bigelow Aerospace, and he was the primary recipient of the $22 million that was spent on the ATIP program that Harry Reid and a couple of the senators got together and decided to have the Defense Intelligence Agency work out of the Pentagon and investigate and spend $22 million to investigate aliens for 10 years or something like that. And anyway, he got most of that money, that $22 million, because he built some buildings in Vegas, near the Vegas area, that have crashed alien craft parts. That was part of the release that came out, the information that came out of the ATIP release, that there are alien craft parts in some of his buildings. Anyway, he was at one time the number one backer of paranormal research. He'd have his PhDs fly in his Learjet around the world and take and cut off pieces of cattle after they were mutilated, after the cattle mutilations.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was the number one backer of paranormal research at one time. So he bought the Bigelow Ranch. He bought the ranch from the Shermans. Everybody started calling it the Bigelow Ranch and Skinwalker Ranch. So then he sold it to a guy named Brandon Fugel recently. So Brandon drives a Lamborghini, has a really fancy black helicopter and a Learjet, and he's rich too, and he's the largest buyer of land in Utah. So he's the current owner. So he's got a show on TV you can see in the United States. You can watch it online if you have the right internet provider. It's called Secret of the Skinwalker, and they're out there trying to figure out what's going on scientifically. And so while they're filming, this alien craft, a little dot thing, shows up over the ranch, and it's, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's split into two pieces, but maybe it didn't. I don't know. I could be confusing that with another sighting where this guy was looking up at a craft and it split into two pieces. Anyway, there's another show on TV that you can also see on the web that was shot next to the Bigelow Ranch, and they saw this light appear over one side of the Skinwalker Ranch, and it just lit up the whole sky. And when the guy who was investigating, the primary investigator for Brandon Fugel's TV show, when they flew him onto the ranch the first time in his fancy helicopter, he asked the helicopter pilot to fly over that area that got lit up on this other UFO show when they were filming next to the ranch, and that guy would not fly. He's the brother of Brandon, one of the brothers of Brandon Fugel that's part of his aviation company. He wouldn't fly over that part of the ranch because he's like, no, I'm not flying over there, because that's where they had that sky light up, and we don't want to fly over that area. So anyway, they're on that ranch, and they're having all kinds of crazy things happen to them on the ranch while they're investigating, and you get to see it on the TV show, and that's pretty cool. So.
Okay, no worries. Yeah, I recommend that people check out the story of the Skinwalker. I believe there's a YouTube footage of one of the people that did own the Skinwalker, and he was recording himself, and you could actually see an ET in the video.
Right.
Yeah. So it's there's a lot going on around that Skinwalker Ranch, and I know Bob Bigelow. One of the things that he was doing, because he made his money in Los Angeles in real estate, I believe, and he's making these let's just call it a trailer in space, where you can actually live inside it. It's
right. He has two. He's the only owner of two. Blow-up space stations that the Russians launched for him.
That's it, yeah. Now, you have to ask yourself the question, with this Elon Musk doing what he's doing and Bigelow's doing what he's doing, it seems like they want to get off the planet for some reason. And God knows why. Well, could there be something else happening? We don't know. But it's another story. It's another interview, I think. Okay, more questions for you there, Mike. The man himself... Oh, no, hang on. Ramos wants to know, please tell us how big is the threat of the mature race to the human race, a Homo sapiens sapiens upgrade. I'm not sure, M-A-I-T-R-E, mature race? Never heard of that before.
Oh, you're talking about Maitreya, M-A-I-T-R-E-Y-A.
Yeah, Maitreya race to the human race, or Homo sapiens sapiens upgrade.
I have no idea what he's talking about. Maitreya is a name for a person that or a being that people believe in. It's like some people believe that Christ comes back as he's called Maitreya or something. I don't remember. It's one of the New Age names that I've heard bandied about, but I really don't know what the question is about, so I can't really answer it. I guess I don't know what they're asking. So.
Okay, that's okay. The man himself has a question. A few of his experiences sound very much like a djinn possession. Has he encountered the vengeful djinn? In Ireland, these entities would be known as the fairies, the little people, or elementals as well, I suppose.
Well, the one that sits in my head is described as an imp, which is if you look up imp in on the wiki site, just look up imp, IMP space wiki, you'll see that an imp is described as both a small demon and an earth spirit. So that's one earth spirit that's sticking to my head. And that the quote I gave you a while ago from William Baldwin's book describes an imp and trolls and stuff being attached to people from having smoked pot and used cocaine and stuff like that. And I done lost track of your question. You want to know
about the djinn?
The djinn. Okay. So I've only seen one attaching spirit. Now, jinn, people don't think of jinns necessarily as attaching spirits, but I saw one video where a guy was actually had a girl in a trance, and he was talking to the jinn that was attached to her from inside of her. And the jinns, I could talk about them, what I've heard, but I don't have any direct experience with them. But I can tell you that I was standing in a courtyard in Manassas, Virginia, and there was a lady, an older lady that I knew that had her. It's the only attaching spirit I've ever seen, and it came up straight off her head or her back, went straight up, and then went straight at me, forward, and it looked like you would think a jinn would look. You know, the old jinn is I dream of genie is just a. Very positive version of a jinn. And the jinn in the cartoons back in the day, they used to image them on TV as a male human that had a lot of muscles. Do you remember that? Like, yeah. They were really big. Okay, well, what I was seeing that come off this lady was like that, but I was seeing it from my psychic third eye type thing. It wasn't, I didn't see it as if it was physical. There was no color, and there was no surface, and there was no depth. I was seeing it psychically, and it scared the, you know what, out of me as it came at me, and I almost fell down. I stepped back like I was going to run from it, but I almost fell down, and then it disappeared instantly. So that's the only attaching spirit I've ever seen.
Why did they want to attack you?
No idea. I don't have a clue. I mean, malevolent spirits attack people. That's what they do. So I'll give you an example. Another example of my attaching spirit. So I've had about 6 different entities try to kill me. I've had a cop try to kill me. I had somebody I won't talk about try to kill me. I almost killed myself by accident. But my attaching spirit sits in my head. I was riding my bicycle with my wife, and we were in Washington State or Oregon, one of the two. And, we were riding along, and I think it was maybe Oregon, and I started seeing this bridge. I was coming up to this bridge, right? And in my mind, I was seeing a bridge that didn't exist, a false image of a different bridge that was only in my head. And in that bridge in my head was like a foot up above the surface that I was riding the bicycle on. So I slowed down and almost stopped, and I went to lift my tire up on this imaginary bridge, and there was a spot in the bridge before the bridge, and the surface of the pavement that had where like there was a earthquake, and one edge of it was higher than the other edge. It had split, and my tire rode up that little lip, and my bike flipped straight up, and the bike was stopped, so I could have just stepped off the bike. But I didn't expect that to happen. I'm used to trying to do a wheelie on a bike, and it comes up, front tire comes up about an inch, and then it won't go up any higher. And so that's what I expected. I didn't expect the bike to flip all the way up. And so I'm like freaking out with my feet on the pegs, and I could have just stepped off the bike and stood up, which I should have done. But I kind of got caught off guard. And my feet are on the pegs, and my hands, I'm holding on to the hand holds, and my bike starts falling to the right, and there's a square pole, a wooden square, inch square pole sticking out of the ground about 5 or 6 foot into the air, and my bike hit that and trapped my feet on the pegs between the pegs and that pole, and my upper body kept falling off the bike and continued down and hit the cement and broke my hip. And so that was basically an attempt on my life by my attaching spirit that sits in my head. And so
And you don't want to remove them?
Well, I do when the world acknowledges their presence. So here's what I want to do. I want to have them, I want to be in a meeting. And in the meeting, I'm sitting in a chair, and I'm up on stage or not on stage. It doesn't matter. And I'm facing a crowd of people that have their chairs, and there's a snake of people to the left and maybe one on the right, and they're coming around the side, and they come up, and that snake of people stops, and there's a guy at the head of the snake of people, and he's got a watch in his hand, and he tells them how long each one can go, when the next one can go, and the one that gets let to go past the end of that snake will come up behind me and stand behind me, and he or she will stick their hand out to the left of my head until I can see their arm, and I'll reach up, grab their hand. They'll close their eyes and relax their body, relax their arm, and I'll stick their hand on my head where my attaching spirit sits. My wife has put her hand, I've had her place her hand on my head, and she could feel my attaching spirit. She could feel it vibrating, and she said it was the weirdest thing she'd ever felt in her life. And so if all of this gets video recorded on YouTube and if they feel the attaching spirit sitting on my head, they can feel its vibration underneath their hand or on the edge of their hand, and their face reacts, they're liable to freak out, but all this is going to get videotaped, and after every one of them has done putting their hand on my head, who wants to, I'm going to look out of the crowd, and I'm going to go, is there anybody out there who actually felt anything on the top of, or on the edge of their hand when they put their hand on my head? Did anybody feel anything? And if anybody raises their hand, I'm going to say, what did you feel? And they're all going to describe my attaching spirit felt like. So we're going to prove over and over and over. I'm going to continue doing that until society as a whole recognizes that attaching spirits are real, that they're not just fiction or somebody's metaphysics or somebody's imagination.
Well, you won't convince everybody. You know that. Even if you do that,
My goal. That's my goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, people being people, even if you have as much evidence as you can, people are just closed down. A lot of people, you know, look, we have this issue with the virus, and there's so much information out there saying that it's not as bad as what we've been told, because the media pushed it, and yet there's people still believing what's been told, and they're living in fear because of it, you know. So, but look, I wish you good luck with that. And we've got more questions for you. Ramos wants to know, what are the chances that you can, or can we know we've been attacked, sucked by incubus or succubus during sleep? When you mentioned that issue that you had before, when you were, I think you said you were stoned or in bed, and I was thinking incubus or succubus, who do kind of turn up, depending, obviously, and they're not, I've never heard good stories with them, put it that way.
Yeah, well, you can, like I said, my spirit that sits on my head was described as an imp, and the quote that I gave you a while ago, say the imps are little people, also trolls, and if you look in WikiLeaks, they're small demons, and basically, you know, I think that most people have two or more attaching spirits, and their spirits are all different kinds of spirits, from ghosts to imps to trolls to demons to aliens to, you know, William Baldwin wrote a book called Close Encounters of the Demonic Kind, something like that. And it was, or something like that, I don't remember the exact name of it, but he would put people in trance and he would talk to aliens coming through them, and you know, and you get all kinds of attaching spirits. They're just, I've had tons of experiences where I could see other people's, I wouldn't say I could see their attaching spirits. The one I told you about is the only attaching spirit I've ever seen. However, I went to Iquitos, Peru, And that's the largest city in the Amazon rainforest in any country. And that's the center of the ayahuasca thing. And I did the ayahuasca thing several times. And it opened me up psychically where I could see these things. The only way I was able to see that lady's attaching spirit was because I was opened by the ayahuasca shortly before that. And there was a little girl standing in the same courtyard or one of the other courtyards in the same apartment complex in Manassas, Virginia. I looked at her, and I could see her eyes moving around really fast in her head. And what I was seeing was her astral body or her causal body or mental body or one of her other bodies that's not her physical body. Mm. Her actual regular eyes were not jumping around, but what I was seeing looked like her regular eyes. And I knew that that her eyes jumping around really quick was it, show it was giving me a symptom of her having an attaching spirit. She was holding a little puppy, bulldog puppy that was barking at me and trying to get away and get to me. And I knew that her eyes moving around like that was a symptom of her having an attaching spirit. And when I was on the, within that same 2 years, which was probably the two worst years of my life, because I was not only seeing the darkness was seeing me. And so you're at a different vibrational level than normal, at a lower vibrational level. And so I was on the street of Manassas and I was walking around on one of these days when it was really bad. And I was looking at all the people in the cars, and every single person in every car had their eyes moving around like that. And the guys I would pass on the street had their eyes moving around like that. And I was in a courthouse. I was in the waiting room outside of the courtroom to go in and see the judge because of some marital issues. And I was looking around the people, and about one quarter to one third of the people in the hallway outside, sitting on the benches, waiting to go in to see the judge, that many of them had their eyes jumping around like that, and the rest of the people, their eyes were normal. And I knew that the people with their eyes jumping around had attaching spirits, and those are the people who were accused of committing the crimes. And the other people that didn't have their eyes moving around had no attaching spirits, and they were their relatives help there to support them. And
this is a common thing that I've heard about. And again, from my point of view, I'm just watching the time there. We've got a couple of questions. We've about 15 minutes left. But so I just want to kind of get through the questions here. But yeah, I agree with you. But my kind of a take on it with the research I've done is that if you are going to be using substances like drugs, alcohol and all that, you're going to lower your frequency. And it's a gateway for certain entities and walk-ins to jump in.
Well, it destroys your auric barriers. It turns it into cheese. That's why they can get in. It's not that necessarily. I mean, the psychedelics, they open up the barriers you have that are further out from your body. You have barriers that are like beyond the edge of the room you're in. Your being goes that far out. It's a lot further than you think. Mm. And those barriers are different than the barriers that are destroyed by the attaching spirits which attach to you. Even though you have the barriers close to you, holes in them and stuff, the barriers further out are still intact. But if you do psychedelics, it puts holes in those barriers also. And then what happens is you're more psychic. You can see the darkness better. The darkness can see you better. And things come at you. Like, for instance, I would be I'd be half asleep in my bed in Manassas, and there would be an explosion in the living room, like somebody set off a grenade, really loud explosion. My dogs would be jumping up, barking their heads off, like what, you know, they're freaked out. And I'd go in the living room, and there's nothing in the living room, right? Mm. And so basically what I'm saying is you're not just opened up so that things can attach to you, and you're not just opened up so you can see dark things, but the dark things can also see you better also because you're on that level.
Yeah,
you're at a lower level. But anyway,
no, I talk, it works both ways, you know. So
yeah,
Be careful what you wish for, or you be careful what way you develop.
Might get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Question from Joan here, and Joan wants to know: does your guest think that those in power are using everything at their disposal to use alien entities to work against us, the humans?
I think it's the other way around. So I was at a MUFON meeting in Austin, Texas, and the meeting was finished. And I'd walked outside, and I was getting ready to go, and this girl walked out with me. She was an abductee. I'm a contactee. So we start arguing back and forth. She said, aliens control the planet. I said, no, disincarnates control the planet. She goes, no, aliens control the planet. I said, no, disincarnates control the planet. We kept going back and forth. And I finally gave up. I said, okay, aliens control the planet. Guess who controls aliens? Disincarnates. So I win. See, so you've got aliens controlling the planet. You've got disincarnates controlling the aliens. And, you know, it's a mishmash of a whole bunch of different things all trying to control the planet. Now, if you listen to people like Linda Moulton Howe or people that she listens to, they talk about like these remote viewers. We could get back to the remote viewing. There's one of those that brought it in, and there's all these different people that are coming up with the notion that there are three different factions of aliens vying for control of the planet. So you've got like half a dozen different races or more in each faction, and you got three different factions, and the factions are very loosely aligned. So you got three factions competing for control. And then within each faction, you have discontent within the faction. And then you've got discontent within each race. And so you've got all these different forces pulling in all these different directions. You got races that want to help us, races that are just standing there watching it all happen because they know we need to mature to take care of ourselves. And then you got races that are not so nice. And, you know, you got all these different levels, and you've got the higher level beings that are multidimensional, that, you know, the grays are supposed to report to, or one of the races, the grays, is supposed to report to the beings of light. And you got people thinking, well, that's it. It's just the grays. They're the policemen of the universe, and they report to the beings of light, and there's nobody else that controls the scene. It's just the grays. I'm like, no, that's not correct either. You know, and you know, who's controlling the planet?
Yeah.
All depends on what day and what moment and who you talk to, and it's a very deep and long and dark, and that's a lot to that topic.
What research you do. Okay, last question, and then I want to get into, we have a few minutes to talk about the way forward for the planet and the people. Ramos wants to know, what's the difference between spirits, demons, and entities? Well, to be honest with you, that question would probably take about 15 minutes to probably answer. So unless you can answer it in one sentence.
Well, entities is a whole bunch of different types of things. We've already gone over some of the different types of entities. Demons is one construct of malevolent spirit that is almost a human construct. It's, you know, there's all different kinds of demons. You got like little imps and trolls that are minor, very minor demons, and you got major demons, and you got everything in the middle and between them, and they're all connected. And that's another whole topic. And what was
spirits.
Demons, entities, and spirits.
Yeah.
Well, spirits is even larger. That's like, that includes humans that are ghosts, and includes multidimensional aliens that are beyond the physical body. And, you know, spirits can be all kinds of things. That's like a very large topic. But, you know, we start out as disincarnates, then we take a body, so we're an incarnate, then we pass on, so now we're back to being a disincarnate, and we go back and forth. Well, it's all over the place.
Is the way forward for humanity? Because, you know, people talk about the disclosure. Now, obviously, we've had disclosure. We just don't have somebody like Trump coming out and saying it. But we already have disclosure. We know there's something going on, and there's so much evidence out there. But here we are in 2020, nearly halfway through the year. What do you think is going to happen to humanity? Are we going to see any you know, changes. I mean, there's also talk about Project Blue Beam being used to fool people as well, along with this kind of virus that's going on. So what's your prediction? What do you see is going to happen going forward?
Well, that's probably the most difficult question you've asked me so far. Predicting the future is not... I've seen the future, and it happened as I saw it. So I've actually seen the future, and it happened. I've seen the future twice, and once I could change it, and once I couldn't change it. And even if you can see the future, it doesn't mean you can change it. Sylvia Brown saw this pandemic coming. She wrote in her 2008 book, on or about the year 2020, we're going to have a flu-like pandemic, and it came about just as she said it would. And some psychics can see the future, and their predictions are very accurate. So in some ways, the future is already set, but in some ways, it's not set. And the way it's set and the way it's not set, like, for instance, when I saw the future, I was driving my father's Lincoln Continental Mark IV, and I was backing up. I just used the restroom in the woods in a park. I was backing up really fast, and I saw this image of myself as if I was sitting in the back seat, and I saw myself turn and hit a tree. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to hurt, turn and hit a tree. The image disappeared, and I slowed down. I looked to my left, looked to my right, and I kept looking. Oh, there's no more trees. I can turn now. I turned. I hit the tree.
Okay. Right, okay.
It happened exactly as I saw it. So,
but are you seeing timelines? Are these people seeing a timeline? So they're only seeing, because there's one of many timelines out there. Is that
okay,
what they're seeing?
So,
they're seeing the most probable timeline.
Well, the timeline that we're on. I've been in other. I've been pulled into other timelines, and. They're not terribly different from this one, but they're very different because all the details are different. But it's not like in one timeline the Nazis win and one timeline the Nazis don't win. They're not. It's not like that. It's more like all the details are different. And like your wife looks different. She has a different face, and you know, it's different from one timeline to the next. But you get pulled. I got loosened from this timeline through using the ayahuasca. It wasn't a very pleasant experience, but I eventually made it back to this timeline because my frequency is keyed to this particular timeline. But as far as this timeline goes, the future of this timeline, you can understand what this timeline's going to be by reading a book called Mass Dreams of the Future by a hypnotherapist called Chet Snow. Him and his partner went – he's a man, and his partner, which was a lady, they had these – mass progressions of people, as like hundreds of people in one session. They take them to the future, and they would write down after they came out of it. Would take them like 100 years in the future, then 200 years and 300 years and so forth and so on, and they would look and see what was it each time in the future, and it come to find out they all wrote down the same thing in the future that will occur. There will be less humans on the earth, so there's absolutely for sure going to be a lot less humans on the earth in the future than there is now. And that's this timeline, and it's almost unchangeable. And what I'm trying to do with getting together with having people video record my attaching spirits, I'm trying to change that timeline to where it doesn't actually happen. I don't think I can actually change it, but I'm trying. That's my goal. And I'm not saying I can reach my goal, but I can always try. So,
what about the shift, like the Dolores Cannon information regarding the 3D, 5D frequency change or dimensional change? Because I hear that an awful lot, and I speak to QHHT people who tune in, and there's a number of them saying, and plus spiritual people saying, there is going to be a frequency shift for a percentage of the people on the planet who vibrate at that frequency. And the rest will carry on one path, and the other 15% was the number. Although there's a kind of debate as to the percentage, but we'll say 15% for argument's sake. That will be on the higher path because they're higher frequency. They've done the shadow work, and they've done all the work that needs to be done. So this divide is going going to take place, and there's talk whether it might be this year or next year. You know, now I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying I'm the messenger, so don't shoot the messenger. But this is what I've been told by guests that I've interviewed and people who have regressed people, and this is the higher self coming through saying that this is going to happen.
Yeah, I can't really speak to that. I don't. It could be happening. It might not happen. I really don't know if that's going to happen or not. Are you familiar with the? Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find it. There's a lady. One second. What is her name? Oh yeah, Sue Walker. Are you familiar with Sue Walker?
Sue Walker, no.
About she lives in Albuquerque and near the Sandia Mountains, and she's putting out the information that underneath the Sandia Mountains there is a race of grays called the Ponte. There's a very positive race of grays, and they're not the grays that people typically think of when they think of grays. They look different. They're different. And Kevin Estrello is a guitarist. He has his own one-man band, and he started talking about it. Then everybody hooked up with Sue Walker, and her husband's a guy named White Otter, and he's a shaman. And they talk about the Ponte living underneath the Sandy Mountains. And that race, according to Sue, is supposed to be one of 32 races that all are going to land and have open contact at the end of next year. Okay. Supposedly.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I can't say one way or the other. I don't have any contact with the Ponte. And I don't know if she's telling the truth or any of that stuff. Mm. But they, you know, Kevin claims that they showed up at his place, and Sue and her husband say they show up at their place all the time, and they hear them psychically all day long because they're right next to the mountain where there might be half a mile to a mile underneath the mountain, and they hear them psychically talking all the time, and they show up physically and all this stuff. Anyway, one thing that race is saying, is putting out through Sue, is that even though 32 races are supposed to come down and land and openly have open contact at the end of next year, even if that happens, they're not going to save our ass. They're not going to help us until we become a class zero society, which if you talk to people like Michio Kaku and some of the other physicists, they say we need to get to a class one society to survive. Well, our class one, what our scientists talk about is what they talk about is a class zero, and that means there's no war, everybody's nice to everybody, there's no more poverty, there's no more starvation, everybody's got enough food, everybody's being nice to each other, there's no more war. All that's been solved by us, and then and only then will the aliens help us.
That ties into the whole 15%. We'll have to call it there, Mike. We've reached that time. But yeah, no, it fits into that 15%, because the 15% who are on that frequency, who are service to others and on the right frequency, that would be your class zero near enough population and people, where the 85% are really these service to selves. The 15% is service to others, and the 85% is service to self, and that would be the kind of timeline or frequency they would go on. But Mike, we've reached that time. Thank you for coming on. Information was brilliant, and great talking to you. Do you want to give people out your website and your contact details if you want to have a look at your website with all the information you have on it and your contact address or wherever you want to give out there?
Yeah, my email or my website is profoundstates.com. Just think of United States, the country you're in, .com. Throw away the word United. Put in the word profound instead of the word United. Profoundstates.com. That's my website. My email address is charles.beaver@comcast.net. And that's it.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, Charles, just stay with me there for a minute. We're going to go off to a musical break. A big thank you for coming on. Enjoy the chat there. Great information. I look forward to the future. So we'll see what happens in the next year. If that's the case, maybe I'll try and track down this Sue Walker and get her on the show. It'd be good to have a talk with her if she's prepared to come on. That'd be fantastic.
She's a fascinating speaker.
Yeah, no, I think I'll do that. I will do that. I'll try and track her down and get her on. I'm sure the listeners would enjoy her coming on and telling us about that race. Okay, just stay with me there. Mike, and we'll go to a musical break. We'll be back after this.
Okay.
Listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
There you go. That was Charles and Michael Beaver. Brilliant information from Mike about his experiences and what he's done. And thanks, Steve. I just seen our Peter. Peter, thanks for posting that up on the chat room there. Of the Lady Sue Walker. I think that would be an interesting interview to do if we can get Sue on and find out about these people, because it's all about trying to find out what's going on in the world and what future we're going to go down to. And obviously we have this lockdown that's happening with the virus, and it's supposed to be, you know, phase one in Ireland anyway, supposed to be eased up a bit tomorrow. And as I said at the start of the show, the UK medical expert came on and said that the virus won't affect the majority of people. So why are we in a lockdown if it's not going to affect the majority of people? It's ridiculous. I mean, the flu doesn't affect the majority of people. So why are we in a lockdown? Again, I just think it's a mind control program to test to see how complicit people are. Regarding, you know, the government turning around, because, you know, as some of you know, next week I have my comrade in arms from OIM coming on to the show, and myself and Steve, who's on the chat room at the moment, is going to we're going to be going through a number of topics, we're just going to do a catch up. You know, we'll go through a number of things. And if there's anything that you want me and Steve to cover or talk about, then send me an email to contactus@circleofwhitelight.com, and I will stick it on the list. And we can talk about it. We're not going to have a guest on. It's just purely going to be me and Steve, and we're going to be playing catch up, and we're going to be talking about the world, and hopefully by the end of the show we'll have fixed the world and feel better about it. Hopefully that's the plan anyway, so we'll see what happens. But it's interesting, you know, going forward as to what's going on. A lot of people have taken things, but I do feel that people have been, we thought, myself and Steve have talked about this years ago on OAM, and we said that we thought it'd be kind of the military be on the road, on the streets, and keeping people in their houses. We never really thought the fact that people would kind of police themselves, and the sheeple would be, you know, having to go with other sheeple and people and everything else. So we never knew that would kind of go that way. And I'm just amazed at how people have been so complicit in, you know, even they don't even seem to even question the government narrative and what's going on. Even though other countries like Sweden, people aren't in a lockdown. There's a number of countries aren't in a lockdown. The experts in the UK have come out and said that we don't need a lockdown because the virus, as I say, doesn't affect the majority of people. Why are we still in a lockdown? So it's a psychological experiment, as far as I'm concerned, and a psychological military experiment to see and see how controlled we are. And I think further down the road, and maybe September, October, you'll probably find that there's going to be a stage two to this, and they'll start bringing out the rules again and start using that as an excuse. And they're getting people used to this routine where you'll have to lock yourself in. And it's just part and parcel of what you want to do. Will they get away with this in the long term? No, I don't think they will. I don't think they will. I think there's good things going on in the background. I would kind of say, you know, I would just say that I posted up an interview that Mark Delvin did. And he was talking to two people about the whole Q JFK Jr. thing. And they actually went through a lot of things in detail as to why they believe that this and Trump and the whole it's all a plan. You know, I know people are saying follow the plan and people are going, oh, yeah, follow the plan. But really look, you have to look at the information in detail. And then make up your own mind from that. Don't just listen to somebody saying follow the plan and ignoring the details. Go and do the research. Go and do the details. Look into details. And then make up your own mind. If it resonates with you, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That's fine. But go and look into the details. I did ask Mark to, you know, give me the people's details. I'd like to have them on the show and interview them about Q and the whole phenomenon and the George magazine and what happened. So fingers crossed they will come on the show if I can get them on, and we'll have a talk with them and we'll get into detail about that. Now, coming up, you had 2 hours of brilliant information on Circle of White Light. And what's coming on at 9 o'clock is, if you go over, I've just put the link in the actual Circle of White Light chat room. It's a Spreaker link. And Thomas is doing a show, Thomas Williams from The Truth, Honor, Integrity. And the name of the show is The Events That Changed the World, Part 2. Now, Part 1 was all about the Roswell crash and what happened there and other things. And it's a follow on from Part 2. So if you are really interested to find out more about the history and what went on, I do recommend tuning in. So stick the kettle on and get your popcorn, make a cup of tea, and pop over to the link I've just put up on the Cowell chat room. And that's the link to Thomas's show. And I'm sure you'll be very interested in that show and what Thomas has to say. Part 1 he did a couple of weeks ago, that I'm sure if you want that, we can sort out a link for that and give you the link for that. But it was interesting, all about the Roswell and the ETs and all about that kind of stuff. And if you're into that, then obviously check it out, go over there. The guest, as I say, on next week is Steve. So we'll have a chat about everything. One of the things that I'm trying to sort out at the moment is everybody should go to YouTube and check out a movie called One by One. The movie was done by a lady called Diane Jesse Miller, and Rick Mayall stars in it. And it's all about a group of people helping to wake a woman up to what's going on in the world. And Diane is sending me a copy of the actual movie. Now, I have seen the movie, but she's sending me a copy of it anyway. Now, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to, when the DVDs are available, I'm going to buy 3 DVDs because I want to support Diane's work, because 98% of the actors that starred in the movie didn't get paid. And I want to at least Boys 3 DVDs, and I'm going to be giving them away free on the show to listeners. When Diane comes on, now, what we want to do is, the DVDs are not available yet, but when they are available, I'll get Diane on, because if people want to go and buy one, then we want to be able to give out the details and tell you where to buy them and all that kind of stuff, but they're not available yet. But when they are, then hopefully we'll get Diane on, and it's a very, very good movie. I really enjoyed it, and fair play to Diane what she did. So that's the plan of attack. But if you want to get some idea of what the movie is about, or little snippets of it, go over to YouTube and type in One by One Movie, and then you'll actually see it. But obviously do that after Thomas' show, if you're going over and going to be listening to Thomas' show. For myself, thanks to everybody in the chat rooms, Circle of White Light, and People's Internet Radio for coming on. It's great seeing you on the chat rooms. You have a great banter there. Thanks for all your questions. Sorry for the questions I didn't get to, but we ran out of time there. I wanted to cover his, you know, what he thought of what would be happening in the next couple of years, and he gave us that information. But for myself, anyway, take it easy. Passing off to PIR as well. PIR is going to be taking up the gauntlet there for their show. So for myself, Alan James, take it easy. Have a good week. If you have any information of interest, send it over to me on the email, and I'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Circle of White Light Radio on CircleofWhiteLight.com, focusing on solutions and thinking different.